This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
You must have said, are you judging, Jer?
No.
Oh, so I'm going to see Crazy Jer.
Crazy Jer. Well, actually, I think Judge Jer has actually been the crazier of the two.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic-playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI Court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pal-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
And of course, they rag on me for not talking enough.
Nice.
Listen to me now, bitch.
That's
Jay Boosh.
You know what? This is how it works. I'm not old as fuck, and I don't play idiot. And those are the two things that apparently matter when you want to play Mindflayer.
Scotty.
And I cashed that GP. Like, that's legit. Like, for me, being just the fucking dad grinder, that's a huge deal.
And Jeremy.
Sometimes you just have to be that guy. We're like, oh, you want to play some Modern? It's like, yeah, I want to play some Modern. And it's like, I'll suspend a Lotus Bloom. And they're just like, oh, why did I want to play Modern with you?
And now, the A-Team.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 227 of the A-Team Podcast. I am Mr. Scotty Mack. I am joined by two of my best friends in the whole wide world. One of them cannot make it since we are recording on an off night. It is, of course, the one, the only, the silent assassin, Mr. KYT.
Hey, how's it going?
Excellent. And Jeremy judging Scumbag Schofield.
Hey, yo!
I actually did some judging this weekend.
Sick!
I know!
It wasn't at the GP. Where was it?
It was at the Adventurers Guild, a shop in Edmonton that used to be kind of
okay.
But it looks like they got some new people in there and they're making it eh. So that's pretty cool. Yeah.
So like from a 2 to a 6?
No. Even at their low point, they were probably still like a 4.
Okay, so it's like 4 to 7?
They used to have a really good competitive scene. And then they had like some really not idea how to run a business, but they had their own game store anyways. And they kind of did some stuff to kind of say, we don't care about the competitive players. And it was kind of great because when they did that, that's when Warp really had its revival and started to get everyone back. Mm-hmm. But now they've got some new people in there and they're really doing some great things. The shop looks amazing. It was a really good experience. It was just a lot of fun. They pretty much canceled the GPT for Vegas. Did it on a different day, and then for whatever reason, the wizard system messed up, and they got a second GPT for Vegas because
Sick.
It never actually canceled out the first one. So then they realized that, it's Wednesday, and we have a tournament on Saturday, and we don't have a judge. So they did the whole thing, and I was able to help them out, and it was a lot of fun.
Nice, man. Mm-hmm. So anyone notable win the GPT? Do you remember who it was?
The GPT, it was one of those awkward ones where the players literally just conceded a winner into the, like, the finals, like, into the buys, because not everybody was going to Vegas at the table. So it was actually a pretty small turnout. It was only 16 people because it had next to no advertisement behind it because everyone thought it was canceled.
Mm.
So it was pretty much not, pretty much no advertising or anything. And, it's kind of sucked that happened, but it ended up being in the finals. It was Scred Red.
Versus... Sorry, was this Modern?
Modern, yes.
Okay.
Modern.
Okay.
And it was Scred Red versus the last player was playing Grixis Delver.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, sweet.
Yeah. Had some really interesting stuff go on, you know, like the Blood Moon on turn 2 versus a guy playing Amulet deck, and then that player calling me over and just like going through every land in his hand, like, okay, what's this? What's this? What's this? What if it does this? Okay, then yeah. So a lot of fun stuff like that. I had a couple feel bad calls. Those always suck.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, but I took down all my stuff. I'm going to do up like a report on it and stuff like that because, you know, tournament reports are important from judges also so that other judges can see what's going on and you can get good feedback that way.
Sweet.
And it's something that's kind of required for L2 progression. And I've decided, you know, as I mentioned last episode, that I'm really going to try and get back on that horse and make that happen. So
it's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I hope that. So tell us about some of the sketchy calls. You said you had like a.
Oh, so I had the biggest feel bad call because there's some things that at competitive REL people don't know and people should know because the rules are pretty black and white in some spots. You know, if we look at like a very popular thing that just recently happened, we talked about it on the show, the Chapin call. And one of the big things that came out of the Chapin call, and a lot of people are watching it, and they're saying, hey, you know, we know that Chapin didn't cheat. We know that he drew the right card off of a Johnny. He just didn't reveal it. But we know that he did good. And it was one of those things where they had to uphold the rules because that's the rules. And yes, we can prove through all these other techniques that he did, in fact, draw the correct card. But we have to be consistent. It has to be so that the next time a call like that happens, the next time you go to a PPTQ or an RPTQ or you go to a GP, that when the same thing happens to you, you can expect the same results from the judges. And that's kind of a big thing, is that you have to have that consistency. So you might not like to give the call, but you do. And there's a lot of spots where this kind of comes up. So what essentially happened is I was doing my deck checks. We have to do deck checks, not every round, but you have to get 10% of the decks minimum in a competitive level event. And I was doing the deck checks and I got to the table and I'm like, hey, it's deck check time, guys. And they went and they grabbed their boxes and Buddy threw his deck in and he had a sideboard. Then he had a chunk of cards and then he had his deck inside the box as he handed it over to me. And when I see that, like my gut immediately like twists. And the other guy just handed me the stuff. And like the guy who's handing me, he's like, oh yeah, that stuff in there is just extra stuff I didn't know where to put it.
Yeah.
So the tough part is by the rules, if you have a deck box, so you're using this deck box for this competitive level event, everything in that deck box has to be considered part of the sideboard if it is playable. Like if it could be conceivably played in the deck. If it can't be played in the deck, then you have like this like kind of like gray area where you can pretty much just like give the guy a really hard time. But the letter of the law is like you can't do that. So he was playing Affinity. And he had, you know, all the multicolored lands and all that kind of stuff. And inside of it, it was looked like it was cards from like a blue-white Snapcaster control type deck. So there were some Snapcasters, there was some Path to Exiles, there was some lands, you know, Hollowed Fountains and all this stuff. And the tough part is we're playing Modern. So it's these are all Modern legal cards. I know they're for a different deck. I can tell very easily by looking at them. But if he threw a Path or something like that that wasn't in his sideboard from this pile of cards into his deck to help with a certain matchup, that's abusable. So yeah. That is something he could conceivably play. So we went through and everything looked good, but I had to pull him off to the side and I said, hey man, like, I hate to have to do this. I checked to see if there was any sort of downgrade or anything like that, because the IPG does give us like categories where we can downgrade if certain things happen, but this isn't. So I said, okay, the letter of the rule of law is that if a card can be conceivably played in the deck and it's in the deck box, whether it's sleeved or not, it has to be considered part of the sideboard. And if it's considered part of the sideboard, then, you know, this is kind of what's going on. Buddy's like, I had no idea. Like, I've never heard of that. I have no idea. And I, you know, you have to ask a couple questions, make sure that the guy's being legit, because that's the difference between making a mistake and cheating. And I have no belief that this guy was cheating. Like he was honestly shocked. He had no idea. You know, he had some feel bad, but at the same time, he was very understanding. And, you know, it sucked for him because he'd never encountered that at all. And I think that this story here, since it had kind of fallen away from a lot of competitive play, there is a good group of people who are playing tournaments there, but I don't think they have enough experience at competitive REO.
Okay.
So I had to kind of give him a game loss. That's the penalty. It's a deck list error. So it's a game loss. So I had to just game loss him there. And that sucked for him. He ended up losing, but he did make the top 8. So it was pretty crazy that I handed out 3 game losses. throughout the event, and all three of those people made the top eight. But it was a 16-person tournament, so
yeah,
you know, it wasn't too hard.
50-50.
So that one was really rough. Yeah. Then I had like the same round. I had a guy sitting come up to me. The loser came up to me with the match slip, and he's like, "Hey, can you cast Searing Blaze without a creature play?" And I'm like, "No." And he's like, "Well, my opponent did it the whole thing." And I'm like, "You got a signed slip there." And he's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "That means the match is over. I would love to be able to help you out, but I can't. So that really sucks." He's like, "Yeah, they were all textless. I didn't know." I'm like, "Okay, so here's what you can take away from this. If the card's textless, call a judge for Oracle text." And then his opponent came up, and his opponent was like, "What's going on?" You know, like, and he's like, "Yeah, man, you shouldn't have been able to do that." And I was like, "Ah." And I look at him, I'm like, "Yeah, you got textless ones in there?" He's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Here's my advice to you. I want you to spend the next 20 minutes before the next round starts learning what your cards do. I want you to do that, because if you do this again, we're going to have a big problem." And he's like, "Oh, okay." So, you know, I was being a little bit tough on him, because it's a rough situation where he like literally just, you know, got a couple extra lava spikes and stuff like that and made that card even better. And then the guy who lost, I was like, "You know, why didn't you call me over when you felt funny about it? Like, why did you wait till now to ask me the question?" He's like, "Well, actually my buddy was playing and he saw it happening, but he didn't know if he could say anything." So it was kind of a great opportunity, because at the beginning of round three, it's like, "Okay, guys, we're going to take a minute here. I'm going to do a quick announcement. One, I need everyone to know that if you have cards in your deck box that are not part of your sideboard and not part of your deck, those cards are still considered. So if you have anything in your box, take it out now." A couple of guys were like, "Oh, okay, blah, blah, blah." And then it's like, "Next, if you see someone doing something they're not allowed to do, ask them to stop, throw your hand in the air, call me over, we can figure it out. Three, if you don't know what your cards do and you can't read them, find out, call a judge, ask for Oracle text."
Yeah.
So I had some fun with that. But yeah, it was really a good tournament. We had one of those like awkward like top eight situations where like people are conceding to each other and like they're trying to prize split something that you can't prize split. And like I had to like grab one of the players and pull him away from the table very, very quickly, because he was about to say something that would make me have to disqualify him. And not because he's trying to bribe somebody, but he just doesn't understand that you can't split certain prizes.
Yeah.
So, you know, like they're trying to like, "Oh, well, if you're going to Vegas, you get all this and then I get all the prizes." And it's like, yeah, he never said those words, but you could see like the way the conversation was going. It's like, "You need to come with me and we need to have a talk about this really quickly."
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure that's what your next question was going to be. "And before you say anything, that's something I would have to disqualify you for." And he's like, "Oh, okay." So it's like, "I need you to understand these prizes are not splittable, okay? So if you're going to concede to him, you go over there and you can concede to him. But you can't talk about prize splitting or anything like that. We already did all the prizes." He's like, "Oh, okay." So they went over and they did a prize split. And then all of a sudden, you know, after everything was, or they didn't do a prize split, they did the concession. And then later in the fact, you see like packs changing hands and stuff like that. And it's like one of those things where it's like, okay, well, I was there the whole time. I had a talk with them off to the side. They never actually discussed this in front of me or anything like that. So it's one of those really awkward gray areas. And that's probably going to be a big piece of my report. It's just like, what are you supposed to do? And how can we be clearer about that? Because it seems like judging in general is very unclear as to how that's supposed to play out and how it can play out. You know, I always go back to like GP San Diego, where I watched John Stern grab a judge and walk up to his opponent and say, "Hi, would you like to prize split?" And the opponent said, "Sure, I'd like to prize split." And then John looked at him and he looked at the judge. He said, "Judge, I would like to ask this guy to concede to me because I need the pro points." And the judge is like, "Okay." And he's like, "We've already determined that we're having a prize split, but I'd like to ask this question now. Am I allowed to do that?" And the judge is like, "Yeah, you can do that." So then John looks at the guy. He's like, I would like you to concede to me because I need the pro points to make silver or gold or something. Gold, I think it was at the time. And the player's like, "Yeah, I can do that." And, you know, it was all legal, but it was funny because I talked to a few other judges about that. And one of like the Edmonton judges, one of the L2s here, just said, "Yeah, I would just snap DQ both of them at that point there, because one was obviously tied to the other. The only reason the player conceded to him to give him the pro points was because he had been bribed with the promise of a split." So it was really, really interesting and awkward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We talked about this when I prize splitted when I won the Bellevue PPTQ. That sounds I don't know. I would be too scared to do that.
Well, that's the awkward thing, because like if you sit down with a table of judges, the rules kind of like it's too vague. It's an honest area where I've had a lot of discussions with judges about it, and I can't seem to get a consensus on what is allowed and what isn't allowed. So even after the guys were all done, and even after I'd hung up the judge cert and the event was already submitted and everything like that, I walked up to the two guys, because again, I saw the packs, everything changing hands. And I went up to them and I said, I need you guys to understand exactly what's going on here. The fact that, like, I know we're done, the event's over, but I know that stuff is changing hands as a thank you for conceding to me. That there with some judges is enough to get you disqualified. That there is enough to be bribery in the eyes of some judges and an investigation to open. I know sitting down that we didn't come to this discussion and that this is all happening outside of things after the fact, that you guys didn't premeditate it. And that's fine, I think. As far as I'm concerned, that's kind of the way the system works. But it's enough that in some eyes is not right. And it's a very interesting point that I would love to get just more feedback from. And maybe that's an area where I think judging in general has to kind of clear up. But yeah, like you say, KYT, in some spots, like I think you can kind of have those conversations. But in other spots, like I think that's one of those things that if they did the exact same thing 10 times, they'd get DQ'd 3.
I mean, the John Stern example is interesting to me. I'm like, because it's like I agree to a prize split with my opponent, but then I'm asking a bribery type question.
Well, you're not asking a bribery type question. You're just asking the person to concede to you because it's more valuable to you if he concedes to you. It's just you've greased it in the sense that Buddy has nothing to lose if he doesn't value the pro point.
Okay, you're right. You're right.
You know what I'm saying? It's that whole aspect of, you know, it's not bribery because nothing is changing hands for it, because as far as everyone's concerned, the agreement to prize split was made before the request for the concession.
Okay, you're right.
You know, like that was already locked in. But some people will say, and again, like I've talked to some judges who say, well, that's all fun and games, but once you ask the concession question,
now you can't ask anything about the prizes.
Well, no, absolutely. It has to go in that order. You have to split prizes before you ask concession. That's something that I believe in, because one does too much without the other. Mm-hmm. And they have to be separate conversations in a sense. They have to be, you know, sealed. What you can't move on to the next topic until the first one is completely locked in. And still, some judges see that if the two of them are happening, like even if one's locked in and then the next one happens, it still influences the second one. It influences the decision to concede the game. Mm. So,
yeah, I tried to be very careful and distinct when I had to do basically something like that. Talked about it on an early episode where I just said, if going to the RPTQ, like he cared going to the RPTQ, he did not, restructured the prizes so second got more, and then asked him if he wanted to concede. And he did. So, and that was it. And the judge was there. So, to an RPTQ that I didn't even end up going to.
Yeah. And the awkward thing with that there, KYT, is like the way that you, as soon as like the prizes favor second place more, it's kind of like I really have to understand how the conversation got there, because it feels like that's the thing that makes me raise my eyebrows, right? Like if it's an even split, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, it was an even split. It makes sense. But as soon as like second place is getting extra prize considerations, that's really awkward. Because one thing to consider is that invitations, buys, that kind of stuff is considered a non-splittable prize. So if like the prize for first place, like say it was five packs for second, first place gets five packs and the invite, you couldn't say, well, how about we do a prize split? I get the buys, you get the 10 packs. That's considered bribery because the buys are not a splittable prize. The buys go to the winner. So when you say that, you're saying, I want to be the winner and I'm willing to give you my 5 packs for it because buys are not a splittable prize. So if
that,
like
that's
that
actually
was...
a really, really important but subtle distinction that people that are listening and do that sort of thing should be 100% paying attention to if they don't know already.
Yes, that is a huge aspect of it. And it's understanding what is considered splittable, mm-hmm. what prizes are considered splittable. Like some of these events and stuff like that, GPTs and stuff, we're starting to see more of them offering like airfare money. So is the airfare money splittable prize? Well, that's the discretion of the TO. As far as the DCI is concerned, only the buys themselves are non-splittable prizes. But some TOs might make the airfare a non-splittable prize because it has to have proof of proof of travel and all that kind of stuff. So you couldn't have a situation where it's like, oh, okay, well, I'll get half the cash and you get the buys or whatever like that. Because again, we're trying to split something that isn't splittable. Gotcha. And that's where we get to an ugly spot. So my biggest piece of advice, if you're in a situation where you're splitting something like that, it's the finals of a GPT, the finals of a PPTQ, anything like that, you're at a GP and you want to do any of this kind of stuff, throw the hand in the air, call the judge over, ask to speak to them away from the table, tell them exactly what you're looking for and say, look, I don't want to break the rules, but I think it would be great if I could go to this RPTQ and Buddy could get all the prizes. And the judge is probably going to look at you and say, okay, well, if you do that, you're going to get DQ'd. Then you can say, okay, so what's the best way to kind of try and make things fair and not get DQ'd? And you can work with the judge. So that's a big thing, is that if you work with the judge, chances are the judge is going to help you out and try and figure out the best way to do it. One of the things that I end up telling the one player is that, you know, it's like, okay, I understand you guys want to split prizes and stuff like that, but you can't. You can concede to the other person and you can hope that they are charitable to you, but you can't have me uphold it because then it's a bribe. Right. And we have to have that happen all outside of the game. It has to be all outside of the game. So if he concedes to you and then he decides after the fact that he wants to give you stuff, that's his stuff to give you. That's not our stuff giving you redirected. That's his to give you. That's has nothing to do with me. But if you premeditated, if you solicited it in the match, then we're talking bribery again. So the best thing you can do is just go over and concede to that guy. If you're not going to Vegas, just go concede to him and maybe something good will happen.
Yeah.
If that's the way you want to go about it. And again, even explaining to him after the fact that even if you do that 10 times out of 10 times with 10 different judges, there's a chance you might get DQ'd. Because even that is crossing the line by some people.
Well.
Yeah. So.
Well, that was definitely an interesting look into the judge life, yeah.
Yeah, and it happens on every level. Like, every level of judge is going to encounter that. Every tournament that you go to, especially, like, the tournaments that are offering these types of things, now that PPTQs are happening every weekend, like, this is a situation you're going to run into at some point.
Yeah.
And no DQs is a great place to be. So, yeah, that was kind of the big thing of mine. I had a lot of players who just were not comfortable with the rules. So I had a lot of like spots where I had to fix people's like interpretations of the rules, like a guy who attacked a player and then tried to redirect the damage to a planeswalker, and, you know, experienced players playing against inexperienced players. When I was collecting lists, one of the players, like I told everybody during the initial like talk, you know, count your deck list, make sure all your cards are there. I'd hate to give out a game loss. And then I'm collecting lists and one of the players hands me his list and says, I'm getting a game loss. And I'm like, why? It's like, I only have 59 cards in my main deck and I have no idea what card I'm missing.
Jeez.
And I'm like, okay, well, the match is already, like, the round's already started. I'm collecting them just after I started the round. I'm like, okay. But that was one of the players who ended up being in the finals.
Right.
That was the Scred Red player. So.
Well.
Yeah.
Well, we had a whole pile of judges all around us all weekend since we were at Grand Prix Toronto.
So KYT was there as well.
He was.
Holy jeez. And how was that, guys? Like, when did you... Scott, I know that the Curls was staying with you.
Yeah. So I had to go and get Curly from the airport at... I guess his flight got in at like 12:30 my time in the morning. So I drove up there. I left the house at like 11:45, went over, picked him up from the airport. And of course he gets in and it's like 9 o'clock your time. And he's, or like 10 o'clock or something. He's like, Scotty, yeah. I'm starving. And I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
Zets? He's like, I love you. So of course I took him to Zets because it's near the airport and you don't come to Toronto and not have Zets. And we wouldn't have an opportunity to do so because the venue was like downtown this time as opposed to being anywhere remotely near the airport.
Yes.
Yeah. Choice planning, kids. Choice planning. So anyways, so I end up taking him to Zets, and we decide to razz P. Sams about it, because that's like his jam, and he's not there, and he's sick, and we're like, fuck, you were having Zets, and he told us to go die, so it was great. And then, yeah, got back to the house, showed him around, went to bed, got up, and basically went back to the venue. Or went to the venue, I guess. So, yeah, we got down there. Well, we actually, no, that's not even true. Holy crap. The first stop that we had to make was at Face-to-Face Games Toronto.
Really?
Yeah, because I had to show... I mean, you don't have somebody come in from town and then not see the fucking store of all stores. You just don't. That's like against the rules. So we had to go see it, and we were going to have mealings, but they didn't have any pulled pork. So instead we had...
The Matt Mealing is the second best sandwich there, right?
No, it's the best.
Oh,
oh, it's the best. I just tweeted I just retweeted a picture of it. The Toronto Face-to-Face Game Shop actually just took a picture of a Mealing and posted it on Twitter. So I retweeted it, and it looks insane. yeah, so we had some ice, some lemonade, Red Bull, strawberry, mango, thanks, pineapple, something. They were amazing. Just insane balls. And then Mo met us over there, my buddy Mo, Mr. Mo Magic on Twitter. And, so the three of us, and I guess a couple of Curly's buddies showed up that live near us. Stefan, I think was the guy's name. And, terrible. It was Stefan. And so we just kind of like tuned up the decks, printed out deck lists, made a couple changes that we were going to make on the spreadsheet at the store, printed them off. And then just decided from there to go to the venue. So that's when we showed up, and it was good. It was good. KYT, I think, didn't get into like much later, but we ended up arriving. We went to the booth. We picked up our stuff, registered for our packs, ran into Evil KYT, of course, Jackie, and ran into Tommy as well. So that was cool. Ran into Jake and Xavier and all those guys from Montreal. And we got to play the Ojitai lottery. See, because in Toronto or in Ontario, when it's illegal to gamble, to collect money to gamble at these sort of events.
Yeah.
So whenever you register,
it's a Canadian thing.
Is it Canada all around?
Yeah. So you get your six packs.
Okay. So we're gonna have a discussion about that later. Then this is good to know. I didn't know that it was all of Canada.
You know, Quebec might be the exception. Because they always seem to be.
So let's hope, because otherwise there's some really dumb shit going on. So we end up deciding that we're going to play the Ojitai lottery, because Ojitais are being sold on the floor at $60.
Wow.
So GP inflation is a thing, right? We all know in the finance community that's something that happens on the floor sometimes, and if you are ahead of the curve and can ride the wave, you can like make it look a bandit. So everybody that signs up gets 5 packs and a playmat. And that was it. So I took my 5 packs of my playmat, and the playmat was fine, sweet, rolled it up, put it in my bag. And then we decided to all play the Ojitai lottery. And what that is just like crack our packs, see who gets an Ojitai and goes to sell it back. So I actually ended up winning with a foil Dragon Lord Silumgar, which I took to the Face-to-Face Games booth and turned into 2 Sinon Blood Life Pads. Since I needed one, and I owed a debt to Andy Peters from Boston, which I have now repaid because Lannisters repay their debts. So, so then I guess Curly and I decided we were going to jump into a grinder, and we had our list all ready to go. We had kind of been like working through it in the last couple days, and I ended up my streaming session last week actually ended up being with Andy Peters. Doc had something come up last minute, so Andy and I jammed my deck against his Esper list like repeatedly. And between discussions with Curly and discussions specifically with Andy, we were able to like fix a lot of the problems that we were having. Because I think like we played 5 games. I won game one in three of them, but only could turn two over. But the fact that I was winning more game ones than game twos said that obviously I was just sideboarding improperly, right? So we kind of looked at what was going on. I was overboarding for the matchup, and we fixed it, and my win percentage like drastically changed. So it was really promising. So we were really high in the deck going in, and we ended up sitting down, and I played. We joined a grinder just to start. You know, Curly's already got the buy, so he jumped in the same one to block for me, and I ended up sitting down. And what did I don't even remember what I played against, because I don't even think I wrote it down in here. I wrote it down somewhere else. Is that right? Down a life, down 8 life, up 4 life, up 2 life, up 2 life. I ripped this off, Stance Temple. It must have been like an Abzan aggro deck. Mirror? Anyways, whatever. I got fucking demolished in like 2 games. It wasn't even fair, and I'm like, oh my god, this is crazy. I don't even know what's happening. But then, I find Curly. It turns out that he also got, like, obliterated in round one. I'm like, okay, so I don't feel so bad. So we decided that instead of, like, sticking around and doing another grinder, we'd, you know, try to figure out what went wrong, take a look, maybe there's something going on. We took a lot of the information that was on the floor, which was that every single person on the floor was either slinging islands or mountains. Okay. That was it. We walked across the grinder floor, and we saw everybody playing mountains, forests, or islands. Like, it was gross. It was like a Tarkared or Esper Dragons, and it was just everywhere. So we're like, okay, we need to make some changes. So we had some discussions with Jake Mazaros and Xavier Algrucci, right? So there's Xavier worked with you on the Pro Tour that you and Jess qualified for, right? KOT, yeah. So Xavier's got a great head for the game, good kid, and. So I guess Jake and Curly and I were kind of having discussions about card choices, and we were all basically on the same deck. I think there was like 5 cards between us difference in terms of the main deck. So some subtle changes, and then most of it was just numbers, right? So it's like 3 and offenses, not 4, or 4 death dealers, not 2, or, you know, like dumb stuff like that. But functionally the same idea. So we started to talk about, you know, sideboard strategies and what about doing this and doing that. And of course, at the same time, I'm having discussions with Willie Edel about it. Because, like, he and I have been talking about the deck for a bit, and he finally just kind of got back to me and said, yeah, like, I'm actually on this deck for this weekend. And I was like, wow, well, have you settled on it yet? He's like, no. And I'm like, well, we're pretty locked in. We just made a bunch of drastic changes. We're really happy with it. So we shared him the list, and then he laughed, and he sent me a picture of his list, and his main deck was, like, 2 cards off, and the mana base was identical. So it's, like, it's in that moment where you kind of get that, you know, that sense of validation. You're just like, yep, did this right. You know? And so we ended up, so Kirill and I made a bunch of changes. Most importantly was the addition of Sorin, Solemn Visitor. Turned out that the card was just like, after jamming the deck, so we obviously, for those of you that are just tuning in this week and didn't tune in last week, and there are some of you, I'm sure, we were playing a Jurassic Abzan list. So it's a black-white-green deck.
Jurassic!
Because we were playing Raptors! So we had full book of Den Protectors, full book of Raptors, full book of Anafenses, which we felt would be, you know, pretty good against a beer, and an easy sideboard out against decks like Dragons, and it's still pretty good as a 4-4 for 3 against Red. And just basically in an Abzan aggro-style shell, and keeping sort of Siege Rhino as the top of the creature curve, and then just filling it with removal spells. And we didn't have any Planeswalkers in the main deck. We had just like a plethora of removal. And in the grand scheme of things, it turned out we just didn't need as much, so long as we just picked the right stuff. So we ended up tuning it up. We cut the stances, the Valor stances. We, you know, cut Ultimate Price down to the sideboard. We upped the numbers of Downfalls. We upped the numbers of Dromoka's Commands, and we only played 2 Abzan Charms. So it was like 3 Downfall, 3 Command, 2 Abzan Charm. And then we ended up playing 2 copies of Sorin main. Because after discussing it with Andy, he was just like, Sorin is always a 2-for-1. Like if the Esper Dragon's opponent doesn't counter it, then Sorin will at least be a 2-for-1. Because I'll have to kill the token, and I'll have to kill Sorin. So that's cool, because that's the sort of like card advantage that you need to be grinding on against Esper in that matchup. So we're like, plus, if we ever like actually ultimate and get the emblem, the opponent never wins. Because they rely on, like, 1 dragon at a time. So you just make them sacrifice their dragon every turn, and they lose. Pretty sweet. And it's super good against mono red, because when you have like three guys on the table and you plus Thorn and swing for 15, your mono red opponent can't possibly kill you on the way back. So it was just like perfect card for what we needed. So we shoehorn that in, and we just tuned up the sideboard, made some changes to a couple cards. Most important, of course, was the addition of a Johnny Steadfast. So which is sort of another card that we wanted for mono red, but it was also pretty good against the green mirrors where people aren't killing creatures. And it's an idea that we kind of got up. So Neil Oliver is another streamer on Twitch, and he and his teammates had been brewing up basically the Bant Megamorph deck, right? They've been taking that and tweaking it, and they have two copies of a Johnny Steadfast in the main deck with Ojutai.
Because that's really unfair.
That's really unfair, right? Here, so what a Johnny Steadfast plus ability says: target creature gets +1/+1, lifelink, first strike, and vigilance until end of turn.
Vigilance is a broken ability.
Okay. So what you do is you plus your Ojutai with it, and your Ojutai now has vigilance and lifelink and is bigger and first strike and doesn't die to anything ever. So not only do you get to gain life, but you also are for sure killing whatever gets in front of it, and more than likely just going to get the anticipate. So it was really busted for them, and then they're also playing all those little middling green dudes, and you can just, ant them across the board, and all of a sudden your guys are better than their guys, and so it just seemed like in that deck it had a lot of really powerful application. But we figured that after one scenario during our testing where we had a Sorin, and then we plussed it, we had an Anafenza on the table, but we couldn't actually swing at the Anafenza for fear of just, like, snap dying on the way back, because we wouldn't have been able to absorb enough damage. We just decided to just not attack, and then our opponent untapped, stoked us, and killed us. So, like, stoked the blocker and killed us. So it's kind of one of the scenarios where we're like, if this was a Johnny, we would, like, snap be in and gaining that life, and we'd still have a blocker left. So, we wanted to try one. We thought one would be neat, and one was amazing. Like, one of them actually won me a game. It was pretty sweet. So, but overall, like I said, the deck performed, seemed like it was tight. Sideboard plan was intelligent. It was cohesive, and we felt really prepared for it going in. So, yeah, I was running hot as the sun. I showed up to check in, and I show up to the desk, and the lady says, "Oh, okay, yeah, welcome." Oh, she goes, "Oh, Mr. McCallum, good news. You've been upgraded." And so we were staying at the venue site, right? The International Plaza or whatever is down there. And so that was whatever the room rate was. And then they gave us the upgrade. Now, I thought, okay, well, that's nice. So she hands me this list of things that comes with the upgrade. Most notably, like access to the executive lounge, which is, ooh, which has the concierge and full business center. And, oh yeah, hors d'oeuvres at from then until 6, complimentary on the house. And deluxe continental breakfast of scrambled eggs, bacon, and whatever in the morning, also free. Unlimited non-alcoholic beverages at the lounge, and they served in the lounge as well. So this lounge, of course, is like on the same floor as our room, just by a via small staircase. Oh, and the most important one at the end. Between the hours of 7 and 12 in the morning, like 7 a.m. to 12 p.m., they would take us anywhere in the GTA by limo at no charge.
Wow. Okay.
It was a hell of an upgrade. And the room was literally twice the size of any of the other rooms, plus the hallway on top of that. Like, we could have actually slept an entire, an entire 32-man tournament in there. Like, it was stupid. Our room was absolutely ridiculous. It was, like, posh to the point of extremism, So I'm like, oh, sweet. Maybe this is just, like, using all of my luck. Because, of course, like, Shaheen's rooming with me, right? Shaheen Sarani. So I'm like, that's cool. But you're waiting for him to show up. And so Jackie and Curly and I go up to the room, and we just kind of, like, see this place, and we're all, like, a draws are on the floor, and this is ridiculous, and we have a couple beers, and, we hammer our sort of last cards and the tweaking and the tuning, and we then decide to take it downstairs to the executive lounge and just hang out. I was, I updated the deck list and sideboard plans on the Google Doc. I printed it out. I'm watching, some play testing going on beside me. we're having some hors d'oeuvres, you know, like some chicken satay skewers and some flatbreads with hummus. And, you know, it was like, it was sweet. Like, oh, yeah, and the vodka sodas. Yeah, sweet, no problem. Like, it was just, it was a really nice place to be. Was, and the place was really, really, really a lot nicer than I thought it was going to be. And then all of a sudden, who messages me but Matt Radichak from the New York area, friends with Gemini, and of course, well famed for his bonfire karaoke, you know, Childish Gambino. And so he actually did very, very well, obliterating just about everybody and missing, losing to Kyle Bogomis for top eight at the SUG the weekend before. And so it was nice to see him come down and kind of like watch some of the playtesting going on because he's playing a Tarka Red. And so it was like some really, really valuable information that I got sort of about the matchup, how to play it, what not to play around, and things like that. So it was really, and it's just like super nice to see him. And I guess that's around when KYT showed up with Alex, and Nick wasn't there, but KYT and Alex showed up. How did you guys get to there?
Well, we got there leaving Friday morning. Alex wanted to go actually on Thursday because apparently there was some party Thursday night, but ultimately at someone's house, but ultimately we decided to leave on Friday morning with Nick picking me up and Alex and heading down. So my preparation for this GP was just to get a bunch of games in with the consensus best deck at the time. I think things changed a lot with the GP, especially since no copies of Esper Dragons made it to the top eight. But it was a lot of discussion. And I knew Alex was, regardless of what deck I was going to pick, he was going to find a way to convince me to play Esper Dragons. In the past, he has sometimes successfully and unsuccessfully made me change decks. It really depends how I feel. Like when I wanted to play Hypergenesis in a Legacy event, because it's basically the easiest, one of the easiest decks to pilot, he decided to, you know, bash my face in with his deck and convince me that my deck was trash. But there are other times when I've played my own decks, whether it be Black Red Vampires and whatnot, and did fairly well. But fresh off winning his GP win, I was just gonna pick his brain. As we went down to Toronto, we were playing. We were discussing what type of changes to make past Krakow, especially since people were adopting the Esper Dragons deck. I think it was still, I don't know if it was the day one or day two metagame breakdown, but I think I saw it as like the third most popular deck on one of the days. And we were trying to prepare for that. Jerry T, his updated list had Dissipate over Dissolve, because, you know, you get to be able to fight off the Dragon plus Haven Ward. You get to be able to fight off the Risen Executioner plan. But, you know, you lose that Scry one, so was it going to be good or not? We weren't that sure. And then comes the adoption of Ashiok that everyone's playing, which is one of the best cards in the mirror because it sneaks under Disdainful Stroke and it sneaks under a lot of the more expensive counter spells. And in the mirror, you really only have downfalls to deal with it because your creatures, Ajitai, and your six mana dragons are too slow to kill the Ashiok by the time it's able to get down and do some work. So ultimately, our list had two Ashioks main for that. But
card is like really, really good against every deck that has Forest also. So there's that too.
Right, right. So ultimately, it was decided that it was good against everything except Mono Red. Now, Matt, that we just talked about, was very insistent that his deck is like the sickest deck in the format. And I think it is. I think Tarka Red is definitely one of the best decks in the format. So we arrived there pretty late-ish just because we had to do a bunch of pit stops. But we got there. And when we arrived at our hotel, Martell and Raptor were picking Haynes' brains on the exact list, and they were discussing. Alex would ask for my input, but I was like, really? You're going to ask me when you have these two guys? And we came out to a 75 that I was pretty happy with. Of course, I think they were more comfortable with, I guess, a mono red matchup than I was based on their changes. Because most of the people playing Esper Dragons, they move off of ultimate price. Because ultimate price is pretty bad. I guess the majority of the format, it's useless against all these Abzan decks. It's useless in the mirror. But it's one of the cards that help me, you know, gain percentage points against mono red because of their dash creatures. You know, you're not always going to have enough Bioblades because you're going to Bioblade their tokens. You're going to Bioblade other small things that they have. And sometimes you just need to have that ultimate price, whether it be for their Heal Cutter, their Berserker that they're just trying to tap out and kill you with. So by cutting them all out, that was, you know, one of my concerns is, you know, Crux and Drown does nothing against these dash creatures. We did keep one in the sideboard, but no, I didn't think that our version was, you know, it didn't have a great mono red matchup to begin with, as even though PV and Alex were able to have positive records against it previously. So dumbing by cutting all the ultimate prices, I felt like we were leaving ourselves to get wrecked by mono red. But we did go up to 4 Foul Tongue, which is also one of the best cards against mono red. So 4 in the main to make up for that. And so other than that, our list was pretty stock. We went with Tasker instead of Risen Executioner because Tasker's just better all around and he's able to block the Risen Executioner. Even though, like, other, I've talked to Elliot, like Alex Bianchi loves the Risen Executioner plan. So there's, everyone has their own take on what they think is really good in the mirror. But for me, my day one was interesting because everyone was telling me that Esper Dragons and Mono Red were everywhere, but I didn't face a single mirror, which was the matchup I looked forward to the most, seeing as how I felt like it's the one matchup where I felt comfortable having some sort of skill edge, unless I was against a pro, obviously. So I ended up facing a bunch of Mono Red, like an Abzan control deck, red green dragons deck, teamer dragons, like an assortment of decks. It was like very interesting. Well, I mean, all the games are interesting, and I guess it's a sign of a healthy format if diversity is your thing.
Yeah, I played against a whole bunch of different stuff as well all day. I played against a lot of Esper dragons. And my first matchup was actually against Black-White Warriors, of all decks. having no buys is awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, and I just decided that I threw that one away. I decided I didn't want to play Magic. I won. I lost game one. I won game one. I lost game two, and then no, that's incorrect. I won game two, and then I just decided instead of playing like on 3 mana, instead of playing my 3 drop and then my 2 drop removal spell and my 2 drop creature and then my 4 drop creature after that, I played my 2 drop creature on 3 mana and then traded that creature and then played my 2 mana removal spell and then never got to casting my 3 drop. Like, I just like flushed my shitter. It was just real bad. So I decided not to play Magic. I played against Esper round 2. I beat Esper round 2. I played against Abzan in round 3, like the mirror, and I crushed that one as well. I played against Esper again in round 4, and unfortunately, I was playing my Sorins incorrectly. Like, I was, like, trying to make a bunch of tokens and stuff, and I think what I should have done instead of making all the tokens was just, like, going for the emblem. But, so that one ended up going to a draw, which put me into the draw bracket. Which I was actually really happy about. Because that meant in the draw bracket, I wouldn't have to face against... who? Atarka Red.
Oh.
It meant that I was going to have to play against Esper all day. And so long as I could dodge Abzan control in the draw bracket, I felt that was going to be just fine. So I faced Blue-Black control, crushed him in two. I played against... my next one was a Sultai control opponent. So game one, I lost. It required 7 Planeswalkers for him to finish me. Game two, I Lion Witch Wardrobed him, and that was delightful. Which for those
Lion Witch Wardrobe?
Yeah, Fleece Mane Lion, Anafenza Rhino. The Rhino is the wardrobe because he just shuts the door on your opponent. Cute, right? Right, yeah. from BBD's article. And then in game three, I actually kept a two land hand with a two drop and some and like three drops and spells. Like it was like a Citadel and a fetch land or something like that. I drew my third land on turn seven, which unfortunately was one turn after my opponent ultimated his Kiora. So I didn't win that one.
Terror bad.
Yeah, and it's like it's rough too because like the hand was insane, and if I just like not like fall into variance, like it's just one of those things, you know. Next round is against Salte Whip. Crushed him in two quick games. And then the last round was against an Esper opponent, and game one, I lost. Game two, I crushed. And then game three, I drew my third land on turn five after keeping another two-lander. And by that time, I just couldn't come back. My opponent had already, like, resolved into Ojutai with a Scorn and a Foul Tongue Invocation in his hand, and there was just no coming back from that. So, yeah, it was rough. It was real, real rough. And my last opponent, I beat as well, but to no avail. Because X21 doesn't do shit. But yeah, it was a good time. Like, I learned a lot about the deck, and playing through all of the rounds was really, really important. And it was actually, it gave me a lot of experience with different matchups and understanding sort of what was good and what wasn't, and what out of our sideboard we were making a lot of use out of. So it was, I was really happy to have been able to play all the rounds and not, you know, and still, like, do not terribly, but. I mean, could have day two'd with less mistakes, but shit happens. How'd you do in the main event, KOT?
So I went 5-4, not great for my standards, of course, but I have no excuses. Have the game at my focus on the game has been at a low point of the year. And obviously, it's going to have to kick back right before the Pro Tour as it approaches. But for now, just not really haven't since coming back from Asia, just didn't really feel like playing that much. But because it was Toronto and because I had to see Dad, Durf, and et cetera, I decided to come.
Oh, yeah. Funny story about Durf. Durf, I reached out to him on Thursday and knowing that I was going to play a Johnny Steadfast, Wingmate Rocks, and Soren Tokens. I asked him to send me or to do some tokens in color. They are unbelievable. I picked them up on Saturday. They're unreal. I'll post some pictures and have Kyle put them in the show notes. They're crazy. Sorry, but note about Durf. Carry on.
Sweet. So my first game, I'm just going to talk about the two funnier games. Game round three, I have two buys. Even though I haven't played a lot, just because you get this insane Planeswalker bonus, if you win a PTQ, you get over 1,000 plus points. So I was able to know that I easily had two buys. To start round three, play against a girl on red-green dragons. And game one was just me. It's one of those games where I feel bad playing the deck because it's a lot of kill your dragon, counter, revealing Ojutai, and then, like, they're out of steam, play Ojutai, kill them, like, that's when your deck is just, like, stopping them from playing anything at all. It just, like, it feels really bad. Game two, I wasn't really that sure what to sideboard against this deck that I haven't played against yet, but we start, she keeps her hand, so I say keep, and I look at her, for her to start the game, she starts the game by drawing a card off the top. Like, she completely brain farted and thought she was, like, thought maybe I played a land and said go or something. So she does that. I'm like, you're on the play. Then she panics, says, oh, shit, and puts her entire hand on top of the library. And I'm just like, I guess we have to call a judge. So we call a judge, and Chris McGuire, Ottawa judge, comes over, someone that has judged many of the events that I've been at, tries to resolve the situation, except because
she had Jeremy knows probably what obviously knows what the ruling is, but because she put her hand on the library so fast, I actually had no idea what the eighth card was anymore. So I think if I had known and could confirm, maybe something different would have happened. Like maybe she got to keep her seven, gets a warning or something for I don't know what happens, Jer. What would happen there?
I'm pretty sure that falls under improper start to a game. I'd want to double check that because that's not a ruling that comes up very often for me.
Okay.
So let's just take a quick look here. And I'm pretty sure that that's just considered a, because it's the turn one of the game, it's not a draw in extra cards. So let me see here. That's 2.4. Let's see. Player draws 8 cards at the start of the game. Player draws 7 cards at the start of the game after taking a mulligan. Player incorrectly draws a card during the first draw step. Yeah, what you do is you essentially mulligan them in this spot here. So she should be forced to draw down to 6 cards. Now, it's weird because they put their cards back on top of the library.
Yeah, wait, so is this...
So what you could do is you could draw those 8 cards off the top of the library if the top cards were still the top 8, if both players knew, and then you should shuffle that up, take 2 cards out and put them on top of the library, and you could probably randomize, yeah, and then you shuffle the library. So then she has 6 cards. She looks at her 6 cards. If she wants to keep that, it gives her the ability to mulligan after the fact with a penalty.
So I'm saying, okay, so my question is, what if I say, as her opponent, I know what the 8th card she drew is?
How would you know that?
Let's say she's like, she has her 7 in her left hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
She draws with her right hand. And they're like still, let's say they're still separate from each other. And I say, hold on. I'm going, hold on, you're going first.
Yeah.
Then at that point, does she get to keep her 7 and just shuffle the 8 back into the library?
No.
No?
No, because no. Well, she hasn't put them into her hand, so you could argue that that's just looking at extra cards.
Right.
So if you're looking at extra cards, then yeah, you could shuffle that card away.
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, she could keep her hand and shuffle that card away. It would be a warning, but that's also based on the investigation showing that she's not trying to cheat.
Okay.
You know, so yeah.
So by doing what she did, due to panic, by like putting the card into the rest of her hand and then by putting the whole hand on top of the library, like that obviously makes it so it's like even if I was trying hard to pay attention, I just couldn't. I just really couldn't tell which one was the 8th card. And the judge did exactly what you said, took 2 random cards and put them on top of the library. And
Those should be shuffled into the library, though.
Right. And they were shuffled.
Yeah.
The funny thing is,
did she get to mulligan?
I think she got to that part I don't remember, because what ended up happening was she kept... And it was like a non-land hand or something. And she just felt so ashamed and embarrassed that she snap conceded after that. Like after the ruling was done. She's like, I didn't even want to keep this hand. And just snap conceded.
So did she draw the 8 cards and then immediately that's when things got all messed up? Yeah, she just snapped through them down. She didn't do anything else aside from that.
Right. I think she was just she was new to the game or new to the competitive scene, because she had told me like everyone in her car or on her team expected her to, I guess, do the worst, but she was doing the best.
Wow.
She started off 2-0, and I'm like, you had a great start. And I also said, I hope I'm not intimidating to play against, and I know I'm probably not. So, that wasn't it. She was just surprised that she was doing so well to start, and I wished her the best of luck the rest of the way.
I would be intimidated to play against Captain Canada.
if she doesn't even know who I am.
But you're wearing a pro website t-shirt. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
And she was just too panicky. It's never happened
like this before. Like, some of my friends saw this happen, and it was kind of funny. One of my other games was against an Asian fellow, a fellow Asian, rather, or fellow Asian, who had faced, who had told me that I had faced him in an earlier GP Toronto. Not the previous one, because I couldn't make it due to a wedding, probably. But the one right before, where I played Reed Duke Zoo. And I apparently stomped him, in his words, in that he just got back into standard himself, just like I have. Haven't played that much since Dragons of Tarkir, but added the line, but you're probably going to beat me again because you're KYT. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Wow.
And I didn't say yeah. I'm like, I don't know. And but he played a bad matchup. He ended up playing Mono Red, where we both won on when we were on the play. Like, I expected the matchup to run out. But in game one, when things were close, when he got me down to close to four, the tipping point was the fact that he had mulligan down to five. And definitely I felt like if he didn't mulligan, I was toast. So I was lucky to beat him in that Mono Red match. And the last match I wanted to talk about was against Abzan Control, where I just did the typical brain fart that happens to me quite a few times. And this is something I've talked to my friends, and they say it happens to them a lot, is where I see a play in my mind. Like, I know the play, and I just last minute do something else. So my opponent was, was it Abzan Control? It was maybe Abzan Midrange, but he was playing a bunch of dudes while sandbagging a Siege Rhino. And I had an Ugin in play, and also the Haven Land. So the line that I saw with my brain was to play Ugin. Oh, no, and the creatures he had on the board were like maybe a Fleece Mane Lion, a Windmate Rock, and a Windmate Rock token. So the obvious looking play is to Ugin minus five, but then he plays a Siege Rhino. Then I can't kill the Siege Rhino right away. Now, if I Ugin minus seven, kill my own Ugin, then I can buy it back with Haven to kill the Siege Rhino in his hand.
Yeah.
But then, actually, if I do minus five, what I could have also done instead of telling myself that I fucked up was probably do this other play that does the same thing, which is on my turn, Ugin minus two, what's left of it. And I had enough mana to just buy back Ugin with Haven on my turn anyways. So I could have done that.
Okay.
But I didn't. So I screwed up what was probably a one game because he didn't have much gas later on. But it did frustrate me because I saw the play and just did something else. Because minus five was another line that I also considered. And when I was reaching for the dice, I just like changed the seven into a two. And then I'm like, what the hell am I doing? So, and I lost that. And that was the one that took me out of day two contention. So it stung. It really stung, but those are the things that happen that make me, that re-motivate me to get better, to get sharp again at the game. And but I had a lot of fun otherwise. The format's really cool. And the deck I was most excited to watch was definitely the Collected Company deck. Just because, like, well, Wesco was playing a different version than Ari Lax, and Ari Lax was showing me his deck on day one and day two, and he was really excited about it, like, just to be able to Boon Seder, Collected Company. You have all these, like, flash spells that make it so that it's hard for your opponent to play against you because they don't know what to expect. And Ari's deck had, like, more double green stuff and Aspect of Hydraven in his deck, while Craig opted more for, I think, more Brimaz-ish, had more white in it. So that type of deck is the one I look forward to try out the most in the near future. as I do plan, I think I'm locking myself up to play in Providence, which is in a bit over a month.
Cool.
So I'm going to have to play a bunch of decks and see what I like. I no longer like Esper Dragons because if Mono Red keeps getting popular and if everyone keeps playing these Elvish Mystics decks, just makes it really awkward. I think we talked about this on the last show that Foul Tongue Invocation just loses a ton of value if people are just playing these stupid one mana dorks to sacrifice when I'm tapping out on three, or even Abzan Aggro decks that play Warden of the First Street just to have that tempo gain. Like, they don't care because you just lost a lot of tempo tapping on turn three while they, you know, resolve a siege land or something, or a 3/3 mana threat. So
I think you need to see, like, there needs to be more copies of Crux Blade. I think, like, a lot of the problems that my Esper Dragon opponents continued to have all weekend was that they're basically only playing like two Cruxes and a whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
And if anything, there's maybe three post board. And I just feel like if you're playing against any sort of creature deck, you just want more ways to kill guys en masse. I don't know.
Yeah. I can see that, especially if we're going to see a lot of these annoying creature decks prop up. I can definitely see that. There were a lot of times when it was the one card that could bring me back into the game. So I can definitely agree to that. But I expect Expert Giants to continue to be a good deck. Marcel almost made it to the top eight, and it was...
Goddamn, Lucas!
A hard break because I was watching the entire game because Marcel goes up a game and he's in good shape.
We all heard about that.
He's in good shape to win game two from what I saw, but I think he needed one last dig to give him a hero's downfall against Siege Rhino. Yeah, because Siege Rhino actually puts a damn beating. And when you see Marcel being low on life and being forced to trade an Ajitai for Siege Rhino, you know things are going bad. You know you're losing when you have to trade your dragon for Siege Rhino and not being able to attack with it. But I heard from Lucas that in his testing, he made his deck that he cannot lose to Esper Dragons. Like, that his deck gets so much better post-board against it that he just doesn't see himself losing to it. And I wasn't sure to believe it or not, but he proved it to me by beating Marcel, and it was just sad to see two of my friends battle out, and then Marcel, who has come so close so many times before, seeing his sad face after it stung. I felt I had to give him a hug after. I felt bad for him.
Well, see, the awkward part was, like, a couple rounds earlier, he ended up having to knock the other Edmonton player out of contention. Like, they end up playing against each other in, like, round 13 or something like that. And that was Gordo, who had won the MDSS. And it was like 9-0 day one and stuff like that. Like, it was just super awkward.
Yeah.
Super ox.
Yeah, we like our green cards here in in Toronto. We also like our Elspeth, apparently. But
yeah, I loved Lucas's little post.
check. Elspeth still legal? Yep. Okay.
Lucky.
Yeah. So you mentioned that there's no Esper Dragons everywhere, but, like, PV won Grand Prix San Paulo with an Esper Dragons list. So, I mean, it can't be all that bad.
I want a quick seg, Jer, as you are well aware of the MTG Alberta thread.
Do you like what I did there?
Man, I haven't read the whole thing.
I made one comment that was just like, oh, geez, guess we're going to have to make a list of which provinces are the best. And voila.
Oh, God.
It degenerated into the which province is the best conversation.
Who won?
Well, I think we all decided that Quebec is still the best Magic province. But it was really a duke out between Ontario and Alberta for second place.
Was it Gordo who said something like that started? And then he said something that Alberta is like the best, or Edmonton to be more specific. And that started the whole thing. I think
Gordo is lives out of his suitcase, so he's been around.
I mean, I think we all, well, I don't know if he or Curly, who is like, who listens to the show and is very Alberta biased. I mean, it depends what Alberta the question biased. Is. It depends what the question is.
So here's the interesting piece, okay? So if you take, like, I think what it comes down to is if you take the top three players out of each region.
Yes, like, Alberta is very strong.
And, like, just take them all away. Then what do you have left, right? And so then, and I actually think that that levels the playing field a lot. Like, think about it. Like, if you take Hain and Stern and someone else out of Montreal, sure, there's still a bunch of really good players, but, like, does that change the tilt? More importantly, if you take, like, Sean and Marcel and Gordo, out of if you take
this, Alberta, we have like actually some like really good. We have like Robert Smith, we have Tyler Bloom, we have, you know, Marcel, we have to an extent Potter. Like,
sure, no, like I get it, right?
Like Potter's kind of stepping out of it, but if he comes back and he wants to play, he'll play hard. Yeah. Like that's,
but like,
that's,
but that's what I'm getting at, right? So it's interesting because I think that there are a lot of sickos in all of them. And I agree. I think it is an extremely difficult pick to make. And you know, I mean, we all know what we all deal with in our own backyard. You know, we see what we see at Grand Prix, but like, I can't even tell you that the Grand Prix results are conclusive, right? Like, you can't say the Pro Tour results are conclusive because, you know, we're having the same, take the top two or three out of each location, and then what do you have left to determine, like, how, which field is tougher, you know?
Yeah.
It is really tough, and you'd have to like stack it all up, but you know, it is super close. We're having this discussion on the floor, you know, and a lot of the people that live here decisively say, like, even if you, so if you go so far as to go like east and west, like make Ontario the divide, then, you know, East Coast versus West Coast, like, the consensus of the people that I was having the discussion with seemed to think that like East Coast has got it because, you know, it's in that case, it's almost like Toronto and Montreal versus Calgary, Alberta, you know? but if you were to try to break down each geography individually, I think you're in for a real tough spin.
If you bring Vancouver into the mix on our side, like, you guys don't got nothing. Nothing. Like, I'm embarrassed to even have this conversation.
Yeah. See, and it's,
what?
It's because you live out there. Of course, that's how you feel. I get it. Pride. It's great. Can't
Manny
we
DeVoody and Seb. Like,
I mean, Manny's a great player. I had a lot of fun hanging out with Manny on Sunday, by the way.
Everyone has a lot of fun hanging out with Manny.
Actually,
Manny,
you know what,
exists to give great fun to the world.
Yeah. So, Shaheen shows up like at 2 o'clock in the morning. His plane finally gets in. I'm sleeping in the room. He finally gets in and then proceeds to keep me awake for an hour as he tries to decompress from the plane, telling me all about how things are going with him and his life and his crazy women problems. So funny. We had decided at the last minute to try to play Hidden Dragon Slayer over our Rakshasa Death Dealer slot. I printed out deck lists. I scumbag Curly so bad. He had sleeping special, so he asked me to submit his deck list. And on the way over to the event, Shaheen convinced me that I'm an idiot to play Hidden Dragon Slayer because the card is hot fucking trash, and to just play the stone cold killer of the format, which is Rakshasa Death Dealer. And I'm like, can't argue with Shaheen, Sarani.
So and deprived, spoiled.
Yep. So I submitted Curly's deck list with the Hidden Dragon Slayer, and I changed to Death Dealers.
Yes, I think he actually brings that up during the deck tech, but doesn't make it seem like...
Like I scummed him out of it? That's cool.
Like good. You scummed him out of it.
You. I played Sunday in the Sunday Super Series, actually. And
how did Sunday go?
Sunday went a hell of a lot better. I was actually X... So it's 9 rounds, the Sunday Super Series. I'm X1 going into round 8. It's top 4 gets the cut. So X2 is like snap dead no matter what. And the prizing structure in that tournament is so bad that like I lost in round 8 to buddy of, oh God, whose friend is it? Ben Moore's buddy. Can't remember. Oh, his name is, I don't know his last name, but you might if I say his first name. It was Brad. Ben Moore's friend, Brad. Anyways, he was playing Green White Devotion.
Oh, obviously.
He was playing Green White Devotion, and it's like the one matchup we see each other at like the round before, and we're talking to Moore, and we're like, okay, so we just need to like dodge each other. Like we just need to not play, because that would be just abysmal. And he's like, yeah, I agree. We just need, and then sure enough, we get paired up. I'm sitting next to Jarvis Yu. Jarvis also was there, so that was cool. So like,
Jarvis won it, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, and that was cool because like when I lost, I was playing right beside him, and I actually watched him finish his game, and he like masterfully, he fucking disassembled his opponent. It was disgusting. So good for him. But Manny was playing the sealed version, the sealed side, and he had the most unbelievable sealed pool. Like it was just mind. It was like face meltingly good. I couldn't believe it. He was playing like Black, White, Splash, Blue. He had the Mythic Uncommon from Fate Reforged in white. He had the Battle Guy or whatever. He had Sick Removal. He had an Ojutai's Monument, to help with the fixing, and also just because the card's insane. He had just four playable rares or something, and all of the Mythic Uncommons from every set. Like, it was just completely disgusting. The deck was so busted. So I'm not surprised at all that he was actually able to take that into the top four as well. And he ended up actually losing in the finals to Jarvis.
Yes.
So it was crazy. I'll have a more detailed tournament report for this that I'll post on Mana Deprived. It was actually the Sunday Super Series I was really, really happy with. The way that it all went down and how well I played. I really felt like, by about round five, I kind of felt like I was absolutely unbeatable. And when you get that fire, you got to kind of run, play into the heater. And I had some really, really good games, some amazing stuff. And I can't wait to kind of get through it all. Of note, however, is I in round seven, I played against Travis McFarlane. Okay. And so Travis is a guy that has only just started listening to our podcast, like within the last like month. And was very obviously doing very well at his first major tournament, that sort of thing. He was playing a Tarka Red. So, like, absolute nightmare deck, like, anytime. And he was just a pleasure to play against. Class act, good sport, a little bit of nerves, but you know what? It's all good, And I was, I tried my best to be a gentleman and nice and accommodating and all that jazz. And we had a really good time. We played some really good Magic, and he played really well. And so I just want to make sure that he gets a shout out because he is he's a really good dude. I had a good time playing against him. So
way to be a good dude,
Yeah, Travis McFarlane. It's at Travi Ab. TRAVIADPET. Travi Adpet. Anyways, it was good. Yeah, so I'll write up and about the deck and what we think and how that all went and all that jazz. So, Saturday night, we went out.
Sweet.
Yeah. So Shaheen came with us, of course. He basically busted out of the event. He did not do so well. We ended up going out to dinner. It was really late because Curly, of course, 8-0'd with our deck, which was like super gross that he did so well. And then in round nine, playing for the last undefeated slot against Robert Vaughn, who was playing like even like a very, very similar version to our deck as well. He was the one that kind of like broke out the Den Protector in Abzan with the Raptors and stuff. And so he kind of switched his deck up a little bit as well. And he ended up beating Curly in two games, putting Curly to 8-1 at the end of day one. So we all went out kind of like commiserate. Celebrate and commiserate together. So we hit dinner up at we went out to dinner with Ruben Bresler and Curly and Stefan and Evil KYT and KYT, myself, and Shaheen. And we all go to Lone Star. We have like this unbelievable dinner and we some great conversation. And then Alex and Matt and all their guys show up So they have a couple drinks, and then we leave them for dinner, and we go off to karaoke. So we're walking down the street. It's about a 15-20 minute walk, and everybody is pissing and moaning about walking the entire way. It is like I am walking with a bunch of toddlers on a tether. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Hey, Dad, are we there yet? It was hilarious. We had had a few pops to ourselves at the restaurant, and that was definitely coming through. We ended up finally getting the place. The place is like this tiny little shack. Yeah, it's like so maybe small. The size of my basement area, you know, maybe. And with a bar on top. Like, anyways. Karaoke was fine. The setup was good. The sound was okay. There was this party of you know, women and men and all that sort of stuff. But then along the entire side of the bar is all of, like, the face-to-face games crew and a bunch of the SVU. So we show up, and we sit down at this little booth, and everyone's just getting shittered. The pitchers are going like crazy. Everybody's having a good time. The shots are being dished out. Karaoke's running, and everyone's just having a real sweet time. So, yeah, we ended up having a really good night. We didn't get home till like 3 in the morning or some crap. Like, it was just bonkers. And we finally got ourselves off to bed. On the way home, of course, we stop and initiate Shaheen with street meat, which is really exciting because he'd never had it before. Get into this exchange where he's like, oh, that chicken burger looks really good. I'm like, no, you're getting a sausage. He's like, what do you mean? You don't go to street meat to get a chicken burger. You go to the street meat booth to get a fucking sausage. Now put the meat in your mouth and shut up. It was funny. We had a really good time. But, that's awesome. Yeah.
I was telling Scott how out of all the pros, I mean, outside of maybe, no, he's the number one guy that meshes with us the most. I mean, I have a great time with Conley as well and others, but I think Shaheen's number one.
Yeah. Shaheen number one!
Yep. Yeah, I agree completely. Yeah, I agree. I saw Tom as well, so that was good. I saw Tom on Sunday. He was playing in contention, and he's another up there for sure. But I don't know, like when it's all about getting in the trenches, Shaheen is willing to go to war, you know. So that was pretty awesome. Yeah, overall the entire event was a real success. As far as I was concerned, I mean, the side events were running really long, which, like, the Sunday Super Series, the events, the rounds were a lot longer than maybe they should have been or could have been. The prize structure for those is always terrible. I ended up dropping, actually, before round 9. I didn't even play it. At X2, my breakers were actually not that excellent, and I was just ready to be home. So I ended up just doing that and going home instead of playing my round, because, like, the potential to win 10 packs was not worth not being home, you know, hipster dad, terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible. But yeah, like, it was really awesome to see so many people that I know so well do really well at this event. You know, like Fournier making top 8 was super gross. He was running the tables with a deck that was very similar to what Lucas was playing. I mean, he's been playing
Abzan. They were working on it together.
Yeah. Yeah. Abzan, like, Fournier's been playing Abzan control basically like for the entirety of standard. Right. So, so that I'm sure doesn't hurt, and Lucas is in the same boat. So to have them, you know, both do really well was great. Edgar is a super amazing kid. It's so funny to me to have watched Edgar's like meteoric progression. You know,
yeah.
If you guys
you
remember,
told me about him.
So if you guys remember the first year that I went and did the Niagara Falls Comic Con, and I played the this was during like Gate Crash and Dragon's Maze standard. So I'm playing with Adam Prozac's 4-color reanimator list, which tries to turn 3 Angel of Angel Serenity. So Edgar's there, and he's the only guy that he plays me 3 times, and every time he plays me with this Naya deck of his, he fucking completely stone crushes me. Like, he's like almost the only guy I can't beat for the entire day that I'm there. And so we got to talking, got to know each other a little bit, and, you know, we friended each other on Facebook, we kind of kept in touch, and so on and so forth, and the last GP Toronto, which took place 2 years ago, he actually ended up playing. He made top eight. He was playing against Huey, and I think he ended up losing, or he beat Huey, Amos, whatever. But then not making it to the finals. But like that got him onto the Pro Tour, which is sweet. And he's a student in Waterloo, right? But now, like to see him now play Magic, it's crazy. And you know, we still keep in touch and see each other tournaments and that sort of stuff. But you know, to see him now come so close to like almost winning a Grand Prix, that was it's just really nice, really amazing to consider. Like, wow, I remember this kid went, you know. So and now he's gonna be on my stream on Thursday with his like pimp ass sweet fucking Mardu Dragons deck. So excited. Which is actually Ben Stark's Magic deck. So yeah, I'm pretty stoked. But yeah, I was really nice to see sort of how well he did. And Lucas, of course, like always a bridesmaid, right? Never a bride.
Well, mm-hmm. He just got married.
He got married, finally did the deed, so yeah, it was a proud moment. Proud moment in Toronto Magic for sure.
Talking about proud moments and completely getting away from Magic, I am having my mind blown as I quietly watch the Alberta map turn orange.
What? Oh, yeah, NDP are winning and have won, right? Is it been official yet?
Well, right now, only 14 people have been elected, and all of them are NDP.
Wow.
They're trending towards a majority government. Like, Notley will be the next premier. They are just crushing right now.
Wow.
Yeah, like, they're probably going to come away with, like, 55 of, like, the 80-some-odd seats.
Wow.
Yeah, mind
scary.
Blown.
It's scary.
So if you're from Alberta and you went out and voted, good for you. If you didn't vote, well, you're a fucking child, so you should get your shit together.
I support this message.
Yeah. No good reason not to vote. Literally every reason you have is bullshit, unless you're a child. So get your shit together and grow up.
And if you are a child, then...
Literally, get your shit together and grow up.
All right. There you go.
Yeah.
Politics with Jeremy Schofield.
Yeah. I don't care who you vote for. Just go out and vote. I did today at work was figure out who out there is saying they're not voting out of like the people on the crew. Because the construction industry notoriously doesn't vote a lot because people think that all the politicians are crooked and I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
So, I sat there and I found out who was voting and who isn't voting. And then I got the people who were voting to peer pressure the people who weren't voting. So I just organized groups to go and harass people today.
Good.
Yeah. That was me doing my political thing. CBC now is projecting a NDP majority. So,
wow.
Yeah. So first time in 44 years that the PC hasn't led Alberta. 44 years.
That's amazing.
History completely has nothing to do with Magic. My
you guys don't like Justin Trudeau over there.
You know what? I don't mind Justin Trudeau at all. He just talked shit about Alberta, and he's kind of right too, because it's like the stronghold of his opposition, like of his competition. We don't really give a shit about him. I can tell you that Harper's a piece of... National politics is a whole other thing. I don't think this is going to turn into an orange province anytime soon, like on the national scale. Yeah, the only reason the NDP's winning is that everyone thinks the Wild Rose is crazy, and then nobody trusts PC anymore. So,
well,
yep.
So I was really looking for. So after this weekend, there's something that, you know, one of the reasons that I made sure that I played all of my rounds and. You know, I really wanted to make sure that I won as much as I could. Like, aside from the fact that winning is sweet, I wanted to amass as many Planeswalker points as I could to, like, potentially earn, like, a buy or two or something for GP Montreal that I'm going to in July.
Montreal? That's in July.
Yeah. And so, I was, like, very excited about going to GP Montreal just because, like, I have a really good time when I go and visit my buddy KYT because I love him and that sort of stuff. But I'm not, there's a lot of shit talk being done right now.
Shit talk?
Yeah. So
do say more.
Well, so it's an interesting thing, okay? So we all know that GPs are now $60.
Yes.
Constructed or limited. Okay?
That's so terrible.
Now, where this
gets... I never cared.
No, I know, right? Like, sure, I mean, it's the experience, but now you're getting to the point where people are really getting vocal about it. And one of the things that has really kind of started to pipe up is, well, in Canada, you know, we get the value of our entry fee. Because legally, we have to be provided the value of our entry fee in Ontario for sure, and I know out west, and I don't know about, I have no idea what it's actually right in Quebec, but so we received, like I said, we received a playmat and 5 packs, right? So
5 packs, okay.
Yeah. So normally it's 6, you know, it was 5 for some reason, plus a playmat, whatever. So a playmat value is what, $15, packs are worth whatever, like, it's close, right? So their concept is, this is where you're at. Playmats are $30 or something, packs are $5 a piece, there's your $60, right? Like, anyway, no, it doesn't quite add up, but whatever. So that's where people are, like, trying to work through the math. So Montreal, notoriously, does not provide this specific TO in particular that is running that event does not provide playmats.
Okay.
The only way to get a playmat is to VIP or play in a side event. So play in the Super Series, pay for a VIP.
Okay.
Or play in. Or make day 2 of the event.
Make day 2 of the event.
Yeah. So if you just pay regular admission and go in day 1 and don't make day 2,
yeah.
No playmat. Even if you're the first
person. If you don't show up on Sunday, if you don't show up Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah, or you have to VIP.
Yeah. Yeah, the what you can get it by playing one of the last chance trials while supplies last. Or one of the Sunday Super Series, and some are also given away in prizes in the side events, and all players playing the Grand Prix on Sunday.
Yeah.
But, like, that's ridiculous.
That's part of the value. Yeah.
Right?
But you know what? We've been seeing this. We've been seeing that the playmats are not becoming a everybody gets it type of thing.
Okay. So here's where the contention comes in.
Okay.
I totally get it. In the States, you have CFB and SCG running GPs down there.
Yeah.
And they're charging that money. And they're giving away a ton of shit.
Yeah.
And guess what? Almost all their rounds end on time. The tournament starts on time. Side events fire when they're supposed to fire. Like, there is a level of professionalism that those two companies bring to the table that no one else is matching. So if I'm going to pay $60 around the board because that's what I have to pay, then I expect an experience that lines up with that. If you are not, and especially if you're not going to just give me my value of entry fee right up front. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree with you in that sense. Like, I ain't going to tell you you're wrong.
Yeah.
I right now, like, what my understanding is that ever since they made the change, they're not comping the judges. Judges have to be comped from the TOs. We knew that the prices were going to go up. And the prices had held firm for a very long time. So when the prices started to go up, it's like, yeah, that's going to happen. But I was like, when the prices did go up and they had all this extra money, you started to see all kinds of other things happen to kind of coincide with it. So again, it wasn't too bad. So,
okay. So can we talk about prize walls?
Prize walls are a super sketch. I love prize walls. Like, they're just like, it's like somebody sat there and said, like, how do we take advantage of microtransactions in like free to play games and put them into this wonderful game of Magic that we have.
It is.
And that was the answer.
It's a fucking dog.
It's the prize wall.
Oh my god. So they ran out of packs for the prize wall. The TO had to buy... So the only thing of value that was actually worth anything in terms of an exchange was that a ticket, a prize ticket, gets you a pack. Everything else that was on the prize wall was basically outpriced, like overpriced or useless to from what I was told.
Okay, so what is this based on? Like, because you're using terms like from what I was told and that kind of stuff.
Oh, sure, sure. So, for example, I was looking at the prize structure, and it's like I get 10 prize tickets if I come in top 8 or top 12 or whatever the fuck it is of the Sunday Super Series. And I'm like, well, what the fuck does a ticket get me? And I'm talking to Chris Lansdell, because he was like head judge on that side, and he's like, well, basically, like, a prize ticket will get you a pack. And I said, okay, like, that's what it is. What about everything else? Well, there's nothing else left. I'm like, well, didn't they run out of packs? Like, I had actually heard that they had run out of packs on the prize wall. And I think it was an announcement or something. And then he's like, yep, they did, but they're buying them back from judges to refill the prize wall.
Wow.
So
that's awesome.
So, like, I just, like, prize walls are an absolute nightmare. I don't understand why people are doing them. I think that it's fucking crazy talk, but I don't know. Maybe there's people out there that do like them a lot, and that's fine, and that's great for you, but I just feel like it's another thing to kind of potentially expose yourself to ridiculousness, I guess. But, yeah, no thanks. No thanks. But, yeah, so I don't know, man. Like, it's pretty ridiculous what's going on in here. And like I said, I don't know what the laws are for Montreal, and I don't know whether they have to listen or not listen, and if they care or what, but definitely not good. It is not currently a feel-good moment in the GP experience, is what I'm trying to say. I'm not suggesting that anybody's trying to scam or be sketchy. I'm just, as a player that is looking to register for this event, I am not having a feel-good experience. And I'm
That's
not
fair.
And I'm not alone. So it's it's tough. It's tough. A lot of garbage going around today. A lot of garbage. And I mean, let's not belabor the fact either that this is going to be a Dragons of Tarkir limited sealed. When Modern Masters will be out, and like literally 2 weeks later Origins is out.
Now, with limited tournaments, I don't think they have to give you packs, because you're already getting packs as part of your
Which play. Basically makes Experiment. It even worse. That's correct.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's probably how they're getting around it. But yes, like, that actually makes it worse.
Oh, yeah. No, it's one of those things where it's, if you're going to kind of play, like, I remember when VIP got rolled out, I'm pretty sure that was a Jason Ness thing. I think that a Western Canadian tournament organizer, just for counts, came
hey,
up
you
with
know
that
what?
Idea.
I mean, we can call a spade and just say, hey, Commander was invented at West.
Sure. And that's a for real thing. And when this all played out, it was, I remember hearing that Jason met up with all the other TOs essentially at a pro tour. I think at Return to Ravnica, they had a big TO meeting at Return to Ravnica. And they kind of laid out the plans of like, hey guys, this is what we're going to do. What do we want to do? They all got together as a brain trust, and they said, if one person's going to do it, we all have to do it. And I think that that's really important, because consistency is a big thing. But where things get all screwed up is when you get these people who are, yes, everyone's going to have to pay $60. That's the price now. That's what the price point is. So everyone agrees we're all going to pay $60. But the people who are like trying to cut corners, all they're doing now is rolling back. And that's like gross. That's disgusting. Because we can't afford people to be rolling back right now. Like, we can't have this whole like thing where now $60 doesn't get you the same as what $60 from the other guy gets you, and you're actually getting less than what you were getting before the price went up.
Yeah.
Like, that part is just ugly. So it's like, yes, playmats started to roll back. We saw that, but they wanted to really push side events. So they're using playmats as a way to get people to play grinders, playmats as a way to get people to play side events, playmats to try and push the Sunday Super Series. That's okay to an extent, but now it's just like, this is getting to be freaking ridiculous. Ridiculous, I say.
Yeah, I agree. There's also a lot of comments about, you know, people saying, oh, well, it's inflation. You know, well, even at the exchange of 20%, like, it's still better than what we can be doing. That's all. But yeah, it's, we'll see. We'll see, man. It's going to be interesting. Like I said, I will certainly be in Montreal. I'll be going to this event. But, yeah, just not necessarily happy about it, I guess. It's the best way to put it. Happy to be going, not happy to be playing in it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, we'll see. And then after that,
apparently there's an Ottawa.
What's that?
Apparently there's an Ottawa.
When?
I don't know. Someone was saying that there's a tournament at the end of the year.
Oh. That's interesting.
Or Quebec City, maybe? Maybe Quebec City?
Interesting.
Ottawa or Quebec City? That one I might go. That one sounds like fun. I could judge in Montreal because it doesn't sound like anybody in their right mind wants to play it, so. Hey,
Quebec City in October. No Ottawa.
What's the format for Quebec City?
Standard.
It's pretty exciting, actually. In October, what's the date?
24-25.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. So maybe what I'll do is, if things go super well with work and stuff, I will convince the wife that we need to go away for our anniversary, which is around then. And we went to Quebec City for our honeymoon. Perhaps we will run it back and stay for a Magic tournament.
Interesting.
It's pretty good, right?
I like it.
That sounds like
a win. I think there's a...
What makes me really excited is that I can spend 3 days in a row eating at Le Cochon Tanga. The thing's insane. That restaurant is crazy. Yep, the crazy pig. Le Cochon Tanga. So good. So good. Sugar pie and beer, and the best breakfast ever. French toast with apples and bacon skillets. Oh my god, this has got to stop. Somebody change the subject.
Have you ever ate pig?
God, yes. Like, off the spit, after it's been cooked and buried in the ground? Yes, I have.
I got a new barbecue.
Oh!
Because I didn't have a barbecue, and I planned a barbecue, and we invited everyone over to a barbecue, and then we didn't have a barbecue.
Oh.
So, having a barbecue is nice.
Is it charcoal? Is it propane? Is it gas?
It's natural gas.
My favorite.
Yes, we went to natural gas.
Have you cooked it yet? Have you used it yet?
We turned it on for 20 minutes to let it cook, but we haven't actually used it because I have podcast night tonight and I had to vote because I'm not a fucking child.
Good.
So.
Wow. Okay. Well,
tomorrow.
Let me know how it goes, because what I found with mine was that it cooks hot. Like my old,
hot?
Yeah, like my old propane barbecue, I used to set it at like, if I'm cooking burgers or something, I'd have it on, like, you know, medium high, and the temperature would only go to like 350, you know?
Yeah.
And with this one now, I'm like, I put it on like medium, and it's at like 400 easy. So yeah, when I first switched over barbecues to natural gas, I burned like the first 3 nights of barbecue, like real bad. And since then I figured it out, but yeah, it was just, be mindful if you haven't cooked on natural gas before.
Yeah, no, I have not, but it's got like the crazy rotisserie thing in it and all that fun stuff. Got a Broil King.
Nice.
Badass. Yeah. Barry, Ontario.
No fucking
Ontario.
I know. It's right around the corner of my house.
I know, that's where you play the magic cards.
That's where I play some magic cards. That's wild.
Barrie, Ontario. Barrie. Royal King. Home of the Colts. A Barrie Colts.
Yeah, it's true. He's not lying.
Molson Park.
No, that's gone.
Molson Park.
Molson Park is gone. Yeah.
Fuck.
Now you're wrong. Wrong!
Wrong! So what's going on magic-wise? What's coming up, boys?
Well, we've got the MTGO Championships of this weekend, I think. And most importantly...
They are.
Yeah, Modern Masters 2 is around the corner. We're starting to get spoilers for that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, which reminds me...
Do you have a spoiler card to share for us?
Yes, I do.
Yay!
But are we doing it on the show?
Yeah. It's a...
Sweet!
Reprint.
Of course.
No, you got... Of course, you had to get the reprint in Modern Masters.
I'm not sure if you guys have played this card in a competitive environment.
What's
before.
A cast of cost? What's a cast of cost?
Give. That's a challenge.
Okay,
a
challenge.
Challenge accepted.
It's red.
I played a lot.
Cost 6. Oh,
okay, but is it red 4? Or is it 5?
Red 4.
Red 4.
Is it Inferno? Titan?
No.
Okay, is it a creature?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay, hold on. That's exciting. All right.
Shit is happening.
Inferno costs 7.
Yeah, it does. It's 5 and 2.
Inferno Titan?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no, no.
All Titans cost 6?
No, Inferno. Inferno costs.
It is not Infernal Titan or Inferno. It has the same mana cost as Inferno Titan.
A 6 mana spell that does things.
A 6 mana spell?
I can't even cheat right now.
Hold on.
I'm going to try and cheat.
It's a sorcery.
Oh my god. Is it Wildfire?
Correct.
Oh my god, that's exciting! Yeah,
that is exciting. And I played with Wildfire. Come on. No?
Maybe those dumb ramp decks that just like...
Yeah, it was. It was dumb ramp decks that cast Wildfire. Life is good.
That's wild.
Really? That's wild? That's what you got?
No, sorry. I'm thinking about like the decks that could play. Like, so this was... It was printed originally, I guess, in Urza Saga and Portal, right? So Portal Second Age, Urza Saga, 7th edition and 9th edition. So, unfortunately, most of the people that are playing this card are playing the, like, ugly whiteboarder version, probably. Unless they have copies of Saga kicking around. What's the artwork look like?
The artwork is the Portal Second Age artwork.
That's so much better. The Rob Alexander work? Sweet. The new frame? That's gotta be really neat.
Man, you know your art, Dad.
He's looking at it right now. Come on, don't give him that much credit. Let's be real here, boys and girls.
Magiccards.info, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be sick. The Rob Alexander? What the fuck?
Next level. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I was almost going to say Reversal of Fortune, but then I'm like, nah, they won't reprint that artwork. Not these days. It's like something off of Jack LaCroix's Tumblr page. But that's really exciting. Wildfire. Sweet. So who is it that gets to spoil that?
It's a conglomeration of peeps again.
Nice. Good.
Jeez, you should have gotten like Flores or someone to talk about that. Get the top 8 magic guys to talk about it. They're way better than us. I think in limited that card is going to be like really obnoxious.
Yeah.
So is it rare or mythic?
It is a rare, I believe. Yeah, it's a rare.
Okay. Wow, so it is actually going to be something you're going to have to think about. Wow. Been a lot of good spoilers for the set so far, actually. But you realize that Primeval Titan is legal. Like, they did spoil Primeval Titan. It is one of the cards.
Yeah. Bear Blossom. Because that's what people really want to play against.
Shifted to Mythic, thankfully.
Yes.
What the hell? Every card is, like, spoiled so far is insane.
Yeah, this set actually looks like it's going to be a blast to play. I will more than likely be incinerating some crazy volumes of tickets online playing this for stream.
Everything... It has everything that I want if I wanted to start Modern.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the new click art is pretty good. It'll look really amazing in foil, I think. And I think there's actually...
Like, what does the first one have that this won't have? This one even has Daybreak Cornet, man.
Yeah, like, they and Goblin Guide. Goblin Guide was due for a reprint. Splinter Twin was due for a reprint. The Eldrazi Giants were due for reprints. Karn.
It has everything.
Yeah, it's really good. Coronet. Lightning Bolt at Uncommon, I think, is a really interesting design choice, which I can get behind. Fulminator Mage needed a reprint for sure. That card was just, like, way too expensive. Mox Opal is still a legendary mythic artifact. They haven't fucked around with that.
I don't think that you're going to get Kiki Jiki in this set. Or Elspeth. I don't think they'll come back.
No.
That's fair.
So you notice they have Etched Monstrosity, Etched Oracle, and Etched Champion all in the same set.
There's a lot of etching going on.
A lot of etching.
So far, this set looks insane.
Yeah. Cranial Plating is back. Eldrazi Temple at Uncommon.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? Yeah, the Eldrazi is going to be... That'll be a fun deck. I loved playing Eldrazi, like an Eldrazi ramp in Rise. That was always a fun deck to draft.
Yep.
I think that this... You know, they did an amazing job with Modern Masters draft, so I have a tough time believing that they're just going to fucking up in this one, so.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, there's a lot of the strategic reprints I think were all placed at Mythic, like a lot of the high dollar strategic reprints, so as they could reintroduce some but not like flood the market. I mean, you know, I'm looking specifically at sort of Mox Opal, Tarmogoyf, Bitter Blossom, Dark Confidant, Vendilion Click, you know, Karn, Eldrazi's. It's going to be interesting to see what the filler is, I think. Everything here is just like most, probably like a third of the cards that are spoiled have been Mythic.
Yeah. Well, that's something you start to see a little bit also. I think that's been kind of the trend that they always show off the big stuff.
Gotcha.
Reading through the MTG Salvation threads quickly just to see what they're saying. One of them's like, where are the cards for Infect?
Yeah, I don't think they're making Infect a thing.
You really just need Noble Hierarchs, and it's in the set, and the rest are just cards you can get pretty easily outside of the lands.
Yep.
Glistener Elf, whatever. Blighted Agents.
Yep, they reprinted your ley lines, though.
Since. Yeah. I mean, it's got a lot of things that I want. I would want, for sure.
Yeah, like, it's tons and tons of value in there. Yeah, it's great.
It's gonna sell like crazy.
Seriously, like absolute crazy time. Cool. Yeah, so GP Toronto was a rousing success. Huge thanks to Nick L. Nuts on Twitter. Gave me a growler of some mystery beer that I can't see yet. So when I finally open that up and have some, I will be sure to publicly share that information with you when I come back next. But what are your guys' plans for this weekend? You guys got any magic in the future?
No, this weekend I got to work, so it's a work weekend. The weekend after, I think there's some magic stuff going on, but I've also got like a lot of like prep ready for kind of the next weekend. The next weekend is like the big like party at my house for like my family and all that kind of crazy stuff. Well, actually, I guess that would be the weekend coming up, is the party for my family and everything. Like, oh, shit, time's flying too fast. Yeah, so yeah, I've got, like, my daughter's birthday's this weekend. My wife's birthday is the weekend after. My birthday's the weekend after that.
Wow.
So we have, like, this crazy, like, on my weekend off, like, barbecue and all kinds of nutso stuff. I might try and jam something in there. There might be a Magic tournament, probably like a Modern Masters thing in there. And then I've got a short week, and then I'm off to Vegas. So that's exciting.
Nice.
Yeah.
See you there, bitch.
Yeah, man. All we need now is just like this, like Scotty Mac guy to like
not go on his company trip, where he's going all the way to Europe to do all kinds of cool things.
You must have said it. Are you judging, Jer?
No.
Oh, so I'm going to see Crazy Jer.
Crazy Jer. Well, actually, I think Judge Jer has actually been the crazier of the two.
Vomit Jer.
Yeah, I do have my wife with me, so it probably won't be that crazy.
Yeah. He brought his babysitter.
To, like, try and get like some sort of like crazy, nice get out type thing like that. Like, I'd love to. The last time I was down there, the MTG cast guys, because I was doing the Monday Night Magic thing back then. The MTG cast guys all kind of had like an impromptu get together at Insert Coins, and it was just a ton of fun.
Nice.
And I'd love to steal that from them because it was a really cool venue, and it just lended really well into the type of people that Magic players are. We like gaming. It's a place that's very gaming friendly. And yeah, just be nice to get out and do stuff. And I don't think we're going to have great karaoke success down there because we don't have Scotty Mac with us, and nobody knows how to plan a party like a Scotty Mac party. So,
sorry. So I actually had somebody come up to me for the next GP Toronto, who works in the with like promotions and all that sort of stuff, and said, "Hey, next time that we're doing this, let me know, get me involved, and we will like do it up stupid." I'm like, "All right." He's like, "I got all the connections in Toronto." I said, "All right." So, we'll see. Next one could be even better. I'm not playing Magic this weekend. I'm going to set out to experience a first this weekend.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I'm hoping that Lily and I can do our first movie theater experience.
Wow.
So she's not quite 4 yet.
Yeah.
This could be very ambitious.
Yeah.
But I want to take
what
her
are you
to
seeing?
I want to take her to go see the Avengers 2.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
yeah. No, she loves superhero movies.
Now, can she go through a movie without talking? Like, does she always ask you questions and stuff like that through the movie?
She's pretty good about that sort of stuff. So, okay. So the concern is like, you know, what are the rules? Go to the bathroom before the movie. You know, use your whisper voice. Like, you know, so we're laying that groundwork now. I'm not crossing my fingers that it's all going to play out, and I may just be like tempting fate here, but I think it's going to be worth the gamble because it could be like the first experience that I remember having with Alex was like when he was 5, I think he was 5. I took him to go see Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. And he sat through all like 3 hours of that movie.
So, now, like, has she have any experience with like Stars and Trollers or anything like that? Have you guys done that before?
Oh yeah. No, we haven't done that.
Okay.
No.
Cause yeah, Petra's done that. And I think she did good the first time, but the second time she didn't do as well.
Well, we've done drive-in theaters.
Oh, yeah, because you have those.
Yeah, we have those here. So we've done drive-in. Yeah, like, Lily and I together, just the two of us, have done drive-in theater.
Yeah.
And she was 2. Right? And we got through that. So I think she can do it. I think she's getting there. I'm hoping that the content is correct. I'm hoping it'll be exciting enough that it'll keep her focused.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Plus, I just want to see the movie. Fuck.
Yeah, we went and saw it at 11:15 on Saturday night.
Nice.
We got a sitter, and we went and watched it, and didn't get home until like 2:30 in the morning.
Worth it?
We went, like, I got to play board games before that. Mm. I've been, like, teaching a bunch of people how to play Mashikoro, and the game's a lot of fun. If you get an opportunity, it's my highly suggest game. If you've played Dominion and you've played Settlers of Catan, you know everything you need to know to play Mashikoro.
Hmm. Cool. Yeah. I'll have to look that up. Mashikoro. This isn't going to, like, spit out one of your ridiculous Korean single searches for me, is it?
I don't think so. It's by Pandasaurus Games. And it's very good.
Okay.
If you talk to your boys at Face-to-Face Toronto, I'm sure they'd be able to hook you up. You could probably buy it off the Face-to-Face web store also.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
actually,
okay.
I need to find the expansion for it because I'm having a tough time finding that right now.
Huh. So it's like, by all accounts, it's like taking SimCity and turning it into a card game.
Yes, but you don't play a card game; you play a dice game.
Sweet.
So what it is you have money, you roll your dice.
Yep.
All of the different buildings have a number in the top.
Yep.
Depending on what color the card is you either score on your turn only or you score on any turn. You get money, you have to buy more buildings, and then you have to build four buildings before anyone else builds those four buildings. Like, you have four default buildings,
yep.
And once you build those buildings, you win the game.
Cool.
So it's Settlers in the sense that you're playing to numbers, and it's Dominion in that you can, like, target specific buildings and build strategies around, like, certain building combinations.
Nice.
Yes.
Okay.
It's very, very easy.
Well, that's exciting. I'll look into that.
Yes.
Next time I'm at Face-to-Face and see if they have it, and I'll play it.
Yeah, they have the base game on the Face-to-Face website. So.
Sweet. All right.
Yeah.
KYT, what are your plans this weekend?
I'm looking at, like I mentioned, probably going to Providence. I might consider going to Charlotte. Which is modern.
I wanted to go to Charlotte so bad, but it's Lily's birthday weekend.
So
that got X-nayed.
I don't even know what the modern metagame looks like since I played the PT. I think there are a lot of... I imagine there are a lot of new brews or new updates that I have to look at because I've heard how, you know, commands or whatever you have in Dragons of Drakir have entered into some archetypes. So that's something to look at. And if Mono Red is still going to be popular, then I know Infect is not a very good choice. If it's Twin and Amulet, then, you know, I'm going to have to see what I want to do there. And then right before that, I'll be in Las Vegas. I'll be going in a week early because my family wanted to go down as well. And they're going to do their own thing. They're going to be leaving. Like on Sunday back here, I'm going to be coming back by myself on Monday, but throughout the whole week, but thankfully nothing to really prepare for outside of looking at the spoiler for Modern Masters. Last time I almost, you know, had a good shot of making top eight, like made a good day one run with Elspeth and Cleek, and hopefully, I open another insane pool. And I'm able to coast to day two easily. I was even. Oh yeah, and
I hope that you play against somebody who unnerves you as bad as that one guy did.
Oh right. He played so slow, and I hope that, you know, I maybe get a Goyf again. Last time I got one, was able to let Jeremy finish a set or whatever. I forget.
Yeah, but, that was the last one I needed, and I still have it.
Very profitable weekend for me overall. And looking to do it again. I mean, it wasn't as bad as people thought. Like, some people get headaches or migraines playing in all these large fields. But as messy as Las Vegas was, and maybe it's because I got the VIP pass or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I bought VIP. It didn't feel that bad. It was pretty good. And if they organize it well, then it shouldn't be an issue. Of course, I played.
Vegas ran extremely well, given how many people that they had. Like, it ran very, very well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I've played at really bad
things, and a lot of these constructed limited GPs that start like an hour and a half late is a huge turnoff. But I know that, you know, it's going to happen, and I just hope for a nice experience. And I actually think it will be hosted by CFB, so we'll see. And so, without needing to prepare for Vegas, I think my attention moves to limited and standard, but more importantly, standard, because I think for the PT, it's going to be standard plus Magic Origins. So get used to playing around all these Dragons of Tarkir cards even more, so that I won't be surprised at all once I have to add Origins. And I feel like I don't know how big of a chance there is of an Origins slash core set type deck to affect the metagame. So we'll see. I mean, it's brought, previous core sets have brought Archangel of Thune, Thunder Maw Hellkite to the mix. So there's definitely possibility for some impact player to show up. But it's been a long time, at least to me, where like the third set of a block, Dragons of Tarkir, affected the metagame so much. Like, yeah, it's in every deck. It's in every archetype. It's spawned new archetypes. So it's the most format shifting one. And I don't really expect Origins to even come close in terms of level impact. So might as well play jam the standard as much as I can.
Yeah.
Do you think there's ever been two cards, literally like one after another in like set order, that have had as big an impact as Den Protector and the Raptor?
For standard, no. It's been a long time. Usually you get like, I'm trying to think of all the third blocks off the top of my head. Usually it's like, oh, Batterskull in New Phyrexia, or but here is just like a bunch of cards that have shifted. Like, we got Ajitai, we got Den Protector, Raptor, we've got these commands. It's like everything's being played. So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, Magic is in a super amazing place. Cedric Phillips actually played in the Star City event this weekend, the Standard Open in Portland. He ended up playing a Tarka Red, came in 8th place. So that was pretty exciting. Good for him.
He played red.
He did.
Wild.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of degenerates in this. In the top 32, there was a lot of really good people. So that's so good on for him. And congratulations to that champion, of course, Christopher Morris-Lent, CML as they know him by. And he basically took a Saltair Reanimator Shell and played Deathmist Raptor and Dead Protector, so it's another card that's still out there. He also played a cute 15 one-ofs in the sideboard.
15 one-ofs.
Yep. Pretty crazy. But yeah, so that's it. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for tuning in to the A-Team Podcast.
A-Team Podcast.
We will see all of you guys next week. Make sure you tune in. And when Jay comes back, we'll read all of the comments, because you guys are amazing. Love you all.
Yeah, absolutely. The comments were fantastic. Hey, I'm the one who says I love them all.
I know.
Fucker.
Yeah.
I love you all. All
right. Quebec's better than Alberta. Bye, guys.
Boom!
Sadly, Jay Bouche could not be here tonight, but instead he made sure to record something very special for his fans. Enjoy!
I had some, some people were talking independently of, like, they want to bring back karaoke.
Yes!
Like, A-Team karaoke. And then I just inadvertently one day tweeted a line from the Robin Hood Disney movie. One of the songs, and like 38 people were like, oh my god, that's the best song ever. So I was gonna do that for karaoke for this episode. If you guys are
cool, go hit it up.
All right, here I go.
And down with that scurvy Prince John.
Oh, the world will sing of an English king 1,000 years from now. And not because he passed some laws or had a lofty brow. While Bonnie Good King Richard leads the great crusade he's on, we'll all have to slave away for that good-for-nothing John. Incredible as he is inept, whenever the history books are kept, they'll call him the phony king of England. A pox on the phony king of England. Sits alone on a giant throne, pretending he's the king. A little tyke who's rather like a puppet on a string. And he throws an angry tantrum if he cannot have his way. And then he calls for mom while he's stuck in his thumb. You see, he doesn't want to play. Known as John the First, he's sure to be known as John the Worst. A pox on the phony king of England. And this is like a sweet fiddle part. How do you not love this song? It's great. It's like the greatest Disney movie of all time. Skibbity boop boop boop. And like Baloo's in it, but as fucking Little John instead. It's the best. This is really long intermission. Taxes us to pieces and he robs us of our bread. King Richard's crown keeps slipping down around that pointed head. I'm wet, there is a merry man in Robin's wily pack. We'll find a way to make him pay and we'll steal our money back. The minute before he knows we're there, old Rob will snatch his underwear. Breezy and uneasy king of England. The sniveling, groveling, measly, weasly, blabbering, jabbering, jittering, gibbering, blundering, plundering, wheeling, dealing, keep-a-tap-a-tow. Prince John, the phony king of England. Yeah!
Nice. Good job. Good job.
Yeah, I'm the best. There you go.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. We'll see you all soon.
I love you all.
Bye!